This podcast was brought to you by Optus Stadium, now taking orders for your next breakfast or lunch meeting.
Good afternoon and welcome to At Close of Business, a daily podcast hosted by Business News.
With the fallout of the Pindan collapse making its way through the courts, journalist Jacinta Burton today talks with At Close of Business about the Pindan saga.
But first, here's the news you need to know today.
The corporate regulator has announced a permanent ban on Kim Hansen and confirmed it's continuing its investigation into his former insurance company, Australian Reliance. Today's announcement comes 4 months after Business News reported that 5 court cases were underway as investors and lenders sought to retrieve funds allegedly lost in the breakup of Reliance Group back in 2016. In their sights is former AFL footballer Andrew Donnelly, who led the group, as well as Mr. Kim Hansen. ASIC said Mr. Hansen would be banned from providing financial services or controlling an entity that carries on a financial services business. It added that a permanent ban was necessary due to concerns that Mr. Hansen was not a fit and proper person to be providing financial services. Mr. Hansen was a director of Reliance Franchise Partners between June 2011 and August 2015. He was also a director and company secretary of Australian Reliance between January 2003 and January 2016. In addition, he was the chief financial officer of both entities from 2012 until 2016. Australian Reliance and RFP each held an Australian Financial Services licence, with Mr. Hansen being the responsible person for each licence. ASIC said its investigation into conduct by the officers of Australian Reliance and RFP was continuing. And in property news, Cedar Woods has failed in its attempt to have a works approval at the brickworks adjacent to its Byford subdivision revoked, with the Environment Minister dismissing its appeal this week. In July, Austral Bricks received approval to build and operate an additional 4-car capacity batch dryer and drying room for its bricks at its Cardup Clay extraction site, which has operated on the southern extremity of Byford for more than a century. But Cedar Woods, which owns the Byford-on-the-Scarp subdivision north of the brickworks' boundary, lodged an appeal against the conditions on the approval, questioning the adequacy of the Department of Water and Environmental Regulations' risk assessment. In its submission, Cedar Woods raised concerns about emissions of particulate matter and acid gases from the new dryer, as well as their impact on nearby residents, and also raised concerns about the absence of air modelling data and the lack of consultation with stakeholders. But the Office of the Appeals Convener concluded that DEWA had adequately assessed emissions and that the conditions enforced would sufficiently manage the risks and potential impacts. In a determination published this week, the Minister noted Cedar Woods' concerns, but said that she had been advised that the particulate matter emissions were likely to be negligible and would not significantly alter the risk profile of the site. Cedar Woods' state manager Ben Rosser told Business News this afternoon that the company was disappointed with the outcome, but that it would continue to advocate on behalf of its residents. And in other property news, demand for industrial and logistics properties has increased over the past 6 months, with the vacancy rate falling to a historic low of 2.24%, according to CBRE. The Commercial Real Estate Services and Investment Firm's latest industrial vacancy report found that the total vacancy rates across Australia's 5 major cities fell from 2.95% in the second half of 2020 to 2.24% in the first half of 2021. Vacancies across Perth's industrial and logistics market fell by almost 1%, from 5.01% to 4.3%. Despite recording the largest vacancy rate in the country, CBRE Head of Industrial and Logistics for WA, Jared Grierson, said the Perth market had bounced back strongly. He said that demand for speculative developments was also continuing to grow, with investors looking to capitalise on industrial assets in the Perth market. And a parent institute spin-out focused on reducing brain damage caused by strokes has listed on the ASX this morning, with its share price rising by 50%. Based in Netherlands, Argenica Therapeutics is developing its lead neuroprotective peptide drug to be administered by first responders to stroke patients. The company said the treatment had been successfully demonstrated to improve outcomes in preclinical stroke models and is in the process of being verified for its safety and toxicity ahead of planned clinical trials. The company listed on the ASX earlier today with a market capitalisation of $14.6 million after having raised $7 million from an initial public offering. Argenica's share price rose to a high of 30 cents on Friday before lowering to 27 cents at midday.
We'll be right back.
We understand that business relies on being informed. That's why Business News is your most reliable source of news, industry insights, and business connections. To stay fully informed, we encourage you to subscribe to our emails, flick through our magazine, and visit businessnews.com.au for daily news updates. It's the best way to ensure you have the information you need to be future ready. Business News. More news, more insights, more connections.
Well, Jacinta, it's been a few weeks now since you broke the Pindan story, and it's evolved quite a lot in that time. Can you give me a bit of background as to what went into that story to begin with? I mean, how did you find out about what had happened to the company?
Yeah, so we went down to the Supreme Court in late May, and there was a writ lodged by Nicholas Allengame, and we know that he was a director of Pindan for several decades. Obviously, a company founded by... co-founded by his father. And he had launched legal action against the Pindan Group, as well as an entity, Pindan Contracting, trying to retrieve bonuses that he alleged he was owed from back in 2017-2018. And this ended up being really timely because there were whispers that there were potentially financial issues at Pindan. And once we called a couple of subcontractors on a couple of the company's major projects in the Perth CBD, we soon realised that, in fact, there were major financial issues, that directors of the company had actually met with some subcontractors on the Thursday to tell them that basically they couldn't pay them and that subcontractors had actually walked off the job on the Friday.
Mm. Well, it's evolved massively since that point. It's become a political maelstrom. Mm-hmm. It's become an absolute nightmare in the business community. Can you talk me through some of the evolution of that story since then?
Yeah, so obviously we broke the story on the Monday night, and by the following day, EY had been appointed administrators of about three of their entities and then liquidators to a further nine. It has certainly evolved a great deal in that time. We know now that the company owes potentially up to about $80 million, that there were about 80 active projects across Australia that the company was involved in, and that many subcontractors, I think the current figure is 500 subcontractors and about 400 trade suppliers, are deemed creditors of Pindan or any of the Pindan entities. We had the creditors meeting a couple of weeks ago. Tensions were really high. The union has been really vocal about some of the issues in the construction sector, and it has very much become a political issue. You would have seen the photos late last week of the rally outside Parliament. Commerce spokesperson Vince Catania has been really vocal about what he deems to be shortcomings with the state government's security of payment bill, and that centres around cascading trusts and some of that money not being filtered down to subcontractors. And then when you have a situation like Pindan where the company goes bust, many of those subcontractors are left out of pocket. And he highlighted that it certainly wasn't the first time that something like this had happened, and it seems to be an issue rampant in the construction sector.
I tend to ask you this a lot around legal cases that are ongoing, and that's when we can expect a completion. I'm anticipating this is going to continue on for years. I mean, where is the light in the end of the tunnel for this?
it's so difficult to say. And that's heartbreaking for subcontractors who are now in a position where, you know, they potentially have to sell their homes in order to cover costs that they're owed. And, we know now after the developments this week that Programmed has taken over the asset management arm of the business, which was one of the few entities that the administrators actually said to, you know, sort of keep afloat and keep some of those active jobs. I think about 100 employees are going to keep their jobs because Programmed, the labour hire company, is going to take over that business, or at least they've been deemed the best bidder. But yeah, this is going to be a very drawn out process, and yeah, EY really couldn't provide any clarity for subcontractors or any reassurances about how long this process could take.
Mm. Well, you've been on top of the story since the very start, and I'm sure that you'll be on top of it in the months ahead. So thank you so much for your time today, Jacinta.
Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by Optus Stadium, now taking orders for your next breakfast or lunch meeting.
If you like what you've heard, head to our Spotify page to like and subscribe. New episodes of At Close of Business are available every day in time for our afternoon wrap. I'm Jordan Murray. See you tomorrow.